So today I want to talk about medical history. As I'm on my way to work, I'm on the bus. If you have an extensive medical history, make sure you get copies of your medical records and make sure you read it. I have a lot of history, and know your family history. I have a lot of history in my family of strokes and high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Just a lot of stress factors that you would find in any African-American family. It's just historically correct. So I was having problems with my blood pressure in 2011. I was in great shape. I had finished the academy. A lot of people didn't expect me to finish the academy or even get in, because that test to get in was very difficult. And I think I made it by 1 second. So a lot of people knew me in the jail as that person who made it barely. And also, at the end of my academy, there was only 3 of us left in that class. And on the final run, you can just run and go all out and just make incredible time. But what me and my fellow cadets decided to do, and like I said, there was 3 of us, we ran that 1.5 miles together. So we were another inspiration due to that, because you see this class running together from beginning to end. And at the end of the finish line, once we made it there, we were in the academy. So there was a lot of people knew us, knew our class. So I remember working in the jail, and we were doing a lot of overtime, and that's where my stress comes from. I was doing overtime doubles 4 days a week. 4 out of 5 days a week, and I worked graveyard shift. So I would work graveyard and then have to work day shift as overtime. It was mandatory. So a lot of my frustration from my first medical incident was due to work. It's cold outside, I'm sorry. And so I was working double shifts, you know, sometimes I wouldn't even go home. And I would sleep on the side of the road, go home, shower, and get back on the road, go back to work. And I was doing all of this because we wanted to get a home. We were looking at this beautiful home. It was a 2-story home, 3,000 square feet. But it was a REC, and for those of you who don't know what a REC is, it's a rent-to-own. If I have any advice to anyone who wants to own a home, don't do that. Don't rent to home to own, because number one, you have to pay a huge down payment. You know, our down payment was $15,000, and you don't get that many money back. And your interest rates are higher. So whatever equity you're putting into the home is not your equity. It's to the original homeowner. So unless you have disposable cash, don't do it. You know, wait until you have enough cash saved to make your down payment before you actually purchase a home. So I was working these long hours to get these home, and also because it was mandatory, else I would have lost my job. So I remember the day that it happened. Well, I was actually working graveyard shift, and they finally transferred me to day shift, which was a blessing. So I got the day shift, and of course everybody knew me because of who my wife was. My wife was in charge of medical. I was coming in as security. So everyone knew us. Well, actually, she wasn't my wife then. we were together since 2008, 2011 is when this happened. And we didn't get married until 2014. So I remember they switched me to day shift and I was working in the courtroom. And I came in and one of my partners had looked at me and said, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I feel weird." You know, I remember that the night before we had went out and we had hookah and we had drinks. Another thing I can recommend, don't smoke. Don't smoke anything, especially hookah, because hookah is like smoking 20 cigarettes at once. It's the same thing. And if you have an aneurysm, that will, along with stress, is going to cause it to rupture. So, when I said I felt funny, I thought it was because I was out the night before. So then all of a sudden, you know, I'm working in arraignments. You know, I had about 30 inmates who I was getting ready to for their arraignment to see the judge. Providing security, getting them all set up, you know, working with pretrial services, getting everything ready. And I remember getting into an argument with a new arrestee. They're not inmates until they get until they go into the system, like officially after court. So I was arguing with a new arrestee because he kept going in and out of the bathroom. And for any corrections officer that's assigned, that they could be using. And he told me that he was a diabetic, and I said, "Well, I'm gonna have to send you back. You're not gonna see the judge." And he was like, "I'm sorry, I won't go back because he knew he was lying. And so my stress went up,
the rear door,
my stress level was up because I had this altercation verbal with a new arrestee. So as I'm standing there, I'm just continuing, you know, providing security and doing what I have to do to get, you know, court set up. I start to feel unbalanced and wobbly. So all of a sudden I hear this sound, this pop in my right eardrum. And then I hear water, like a gush of water, and I pass out. So I pass out, and they said that one of the new arrestees tried to catch me. And they also said that if that new arrestee wouldn't have tried to catch me, I probably would have hit the ground. And if my head would have hit the ground, I would have been dead. That was all speculation, so, but it was a possibility. So I try to get up after I pass out. And it just felt like it was a ton of bricks holding me down, like, you know, when you think of the mafia, you know, when they take, you know, you see the movies when they tie people up in cinder blocks and throw them in the ocean. That's what I felt like. I felt like I was strapped down by a bunch of cinder blocks and I couldn't get up. So they had to take me to the infirmary. Where all the inmates go, and the doctors in the jail, who all knew me, who all worked for the person I was with. All of her subordinates were working on me to try to get me stabilized. And so they get me stabilized, and they had asked her if she wanted to take me in the car, but you know, if she took me via car, that she may have to pull over and do CPR. And we were like, no.
Avenue U.S. 9th Street.
And we said, just call an ambulance. And before the ambulance came, I told one of my coworkers, I was like, please take me to the restroom. Because I had to poop. And I did. I guess all of the toxins in my body needed to come out. So I went to the bathroom and I pooped. And then they put me in the ambulance and they took me to one hospital that specialized with the heart. because I was holding my chest. And then they said no, and they sent me to another hospital, and they took a scan, and they noticed that I had a ruptured aneurysm. So they said that they were not going to do surgery because they had time, and they sent my family home. So right after they sent me my family home, they rushed me into emergency surgery, because then I don't know if my aneurysms ruptured simultaneously, but two aneurysms ruptured. I don't know if one happened in the jail and the other happened while I was in the hospital, but it was two, not one. So they rushed me into surgery, and I had to call my family and let them know that I was in surgery. And from what I was told, when I woke up, I came out of surgery just yelling and screaming and blaming and cursing, just enraged. That's how I came through when I woke up. And when I woke up, I had this metal rod screwed into my head with tubes coming out of my brain, and the left side of my head was cut open, and it had, there was a drip in there, and I don't know what the drip was holding. It was holding excess brain fluid or blood or whatever it was. But when I looked into the mirror, I was in shock of what I saw.
Avenue U, McDonald Avenue.
And so I ended up staying in ICU. You know, a lot of people came to visit me, a lot of my fellow officers. I remember the visits. It was really nice. So I stayed in ICU for 3 weeks. And the entire time that I was there, you would hear the monitors, the heart monitors, flat lines. I heard a lot of death around me. People were dying of the same thing that I survived. And I remember the sounds, and I remember the cries, and I remember the pain. But I survived. I couldn't walk. Barely talk. I had to be fed. I had to be helped to use the bathroom. And I did my rehabilitation in the ICU in New Mexico. And I went through 3 weeks of being in ICU. And after that, I was released. A lot of the doctors were surprised at my recovery. You know, I was younger.
Avenue U, East 4th Street.
I believe it happened in 2011, so I was in my early 40s. So I was younger. I was in, like I said, I was in good shape. But, you know, it was just, you know, my stress levels. And if you know anything about aneurysms, they can rupture when you're in a high-stress environment. You know, it's constant blood flow, and it's that area of your vessel that's really thin, and the blood constantly flows at a heavier rate than it can rupture. It's almost like putting too much air inside of a tire, and that thin area of the tire bursts, and that's what happened to me. And so I remember my mother coming to see me, and my brother. And my mother doesn't like to fly. So she came, my brother came. No one else in my family could make it, which was okay, but I spoke to them on the phone every day. And ended up going home. And some of the people who worked with me would come and, you know, spend a few hours with me at home. You know, my mother was taking care of me. My brother was helping me. You know, I still had to take care of things like, you know, get the kids to daycare because the person I was with went back to work. They had to go back to work. I mean, I guess they did. So a lot of things I had to do, I still had to take care of while I was recovering. I had 54 staples in my head. And then I remember when they took the rod out of my head. I remember that there was one of the nurses who we knew was there. But when they described what they were going to do, even as a nurse, she had to leave. She didn't want to see that. So as I'm holding my jaw and they're unscrewing this thing out of my head, this rod out of my head, you can hear like the gushing sound of, I guess, my skull and the blood and my brain. You can hear it gushing as they're turning and turning, and they pulled it out of my head. So that's what I remember from the hospital. When I got to the hospital, get home, I remember rehabilitating. A lot of it was on my own, like I said. I still had to do my duties as get the kids to daycare, you know. I remember taking them a couple of times because no one could do it. My mother and my brother came with me. My recovery was quite remarkable. It happened fast, but it was also a slow process. It took about 2 years for me to be fully recovered. So I was out of work. You know, I was recovering. I remember going to church, you know, shaving my head and still going to church. You know, I had these staples in my head, and I knew everybody was looking at me. I mean, but I didn't care because church meant a lot to me. Up until a point that we had a pastor, we had a guest pastor, and he started talking about, you know, how, you know, the homosexual lifestyle is a sin. And from that day forward, I never went back to that church ever again, because it's not anyone's job to judge. God has the final judgment. So I never went back to that church ever again. So I went through my recovery, ended up letting go of the house, but it was a blessing because we knew the realtor really well, and he knew. He actually came to see me in the hospital, so they were able to find someone to take over the house. I mean, of course, we never got $15,000 back, and you know, it was a loss. It was okay, you know, as long as we didn't have any ties or connections to the house, that was fine. So they found someone to take over. And then after that, I think after that, we moved to I think it was Colorado. I'm not sure. I think. Maybe. Yeah, I think it was. And I just rehabbed there. You know, I stayed out of work to pay the kids and continue my rehab. But explaining all this because I went through two ruptured aneurysms, and it took me 2 years to get back on my feet. And then my third aneurysm was in a spot that they didn't want to operate on because it was dangerous. So the stress from my personal life, you know, that third aneurysm started to grow. And when they found it in California, that's when I decided to have the surgery. And when they had the surgery, that's when I had my stroke. But New Mexico was, if I was gonna have that surgery, New Mexico was the perfect place to have it, because they treated the person I was with as if they were spouse.
Avenue UE 13th Street.
They gave them all of the access to me medically. I allowed them to make all my medical decisions without being married. So it was, I had a really good experience. I went home, but then I was home for a couple of weeks, and I realized that my ventricles were growing. I started to feel unbalanced, and you know, I just started to feel those signs, you know. For anyone who has high blood pressure, you can feel your blood pressure getting high. Like, I usually feel it in the back of my head and neck, you know, in my frontal lobe. And so I started to feel signs that something was not right. It was like after my stroke, I would lose vision in my right eye. So I had those signs. With these signs where my ventricles were getting enlarged. So that's when they had to put a shunt in my brain. So I had to go back into the hospital in December for a second surgery where they put a shunt, and it's a tube that goes from your brain all the way to your stomach. And it gets rid of all the excess fluid that builds up in your brain, and it releases it to your stomach. So after I went back for that, I didn't go back to the hospital, which I should have. I should have monitored it. Well, actually, I did, because there was a time after Colorado where we went in. Well, wherever Memorial Hermann is, Memorial Hermann, I was constantly getting scans and scans and scans. I even made an announcement on Facebook that I didn't have any more aneurysms, when I did.
The rear door.
I did have the third aneurysm that my surgeon told me about, but Memorial Hermann kept missing it with the scans. I didn't see it on the scans. And I guess it didn't show itself until the stress in my personal life. It began to grow. So as it got bigger, that's when they found it again. So I mean, a lot of people don't know my medical history, and that's the reason why I'm doing this podcast today. You know, New Mexico was good to me. California was not. Because I can tell you, after a stroke, the state of California expects you to be better after a year.
And
that may be true for someone who didn't have multiple brain injuries, but I had three ruptured aneurysms and a stroke. So my recovery is not going to be the same or as fast. You know, I expected to recover maybe 5 years to be 100%, but now my recovery is stalled because a lot of people are using my recovery against me. You know, I haven't worked out in a while because my videos are being used against me. I wanted to use those videos as an inspiration, but it was used against me for something else. People were trying to prove that I don't have a disability.
That's it. From the rear door.
and they were successful because currently I'm not receiving a disability. Another thing I can tell you, if you ever have to go through disability, have an attorney up front. Don't do it on your own like I did. You do it with an attorney. Because what the state wants you to do, they want you to get frustrated and not apply and not move forward. So whatever back pay that they owe you, they don't have to pay. And they don't have to give you any payments moving forward. So they try to, I don't know what's the word. They try to make you wait it out till you get frustrated to the point where they don't have to deal with you anymore. And then also the health insurance that I have right now is horrible. They won't approve me for any more rehab visits. I guess I used all my visits for the year. And now I have to put it in again. But my doctor actually wants to speak with my caseworker because he said I need it. You know, right now I'm working. I applied for over 100 jobs and finally one job took me. So I'm getting rehabilitation as far as like problem solving and, you know, working. I work part-time. That's all I'm approved for. I make minimum wage. And I don't have good health insurance. I don't have rehabilitation. You know, I don't have disability. So if it were not for my immediate family, I would more than likely be homeless. I mean, the reason why you see disabled people on the streets homeless is because they've been discarded by their family. They've been discarded by the system and they've been left to fend for themselves. So I actually have a new appreciation for people who I see who are homeless, because I know that could be me. Right now I'm living in an Airbnb, but because I don't make 40 times the rent, I have to go back to living with my mother when this is done, which is okay because I just felt like my mother and I needed a little break. And now when she sees me, I get these big hugs. You know, she misses me. So I'm going to be okay with going back with my mother and taking care of her and making sure she's okay. But, you know, I've been abandoned by the state. I've been abandoned by the courts. I've been abandoned by the family I was with for 12 years. Usually when you go through something like this, more than likely you will suffer some sense of abandonment. They will try to discard you. The one important advice I can get you is make sure you have all your medical files and get an attorney. Get an attorney, which is something that I didn't do. But do it. Get an attorney and make sure that attorney goes through the process with you. I'm still going to my doctor's appointments. I mean, I recently went to a doctor's appointment and like I said, he wants to speak to my caseworker because he can't believe that I'm not getting any rehabilitation. He's concerned because the pain in my arm and the stiffness in my arm is worsening. I also feel, I'm starting to feel a lot of pain in my hip, because when I had my stroke, my entire left side was paralyzed. So I'm starting to getting pain in my hip, and my hand is stiffening a lot and hurts me a lot as I'm working. But I'm just gonna keep, I'm gonna keep going through it because this is the only way I'm gonna get better. And I also feel like pins. I think the nerve endings in my left knee is really inflamed. It feels like I have shingles, but I already had the shingles vaccine because yes, I did have the chicken pox when I was a kid. So I got the shingles. I got two shots for the shingles vaccine. But the nerve endings by my knee, it feels like it's on fire. It's like when it touches, it feels like a rug burn. That's exactly what it feels like, a rug burn. And because it's very sensitive. So that's coming back. So although I'm making progress, you know, as far as like being able to socialize with people, I think for a long time I was afraid to go back to work because I was afraid that people would make fun of me because of my hand, because of the spasticity in my hand, and I'm not as mobile. So that's the reason why I left my mother's house, is because I needed to get out of that bubble. You know, I needed to fend for myself, and you know, it pushed me, and I kept getting rejected by a lot of jobs. But finally, this job accepted me, so I'm very happy. And it's only a seasonal position, so it's gonna end soon. And then I gotta go back to the drawing board and find another job that will help me. Someone that will accept me. Which is tough because people think if you have an extensive medical history, they think if they hire you, that the probability of you having another medical incident is high. And with my job in corrections, I tried to put in for workman's comp, but the jail wouldn't help me because they didn't feel that they had anything to blame. But when you're making people work those hours in such a high, stressful environment, you have some culpability to people's medical conditions. You know, it's a lot of times when corrections officers commit suicide, it is the fault of the facility for which they work for. It's the environment. They don't provide you with enough resources. So the jail got away with paying nothing as far as workman's comp. You know, the person I was with was very close to all the higher-ups, and I was convinced not to file for workman's comp so it wouldn't affect their job. And I didn't apply for it, so they never had any responsibility for what happened to me, when indeed they had a lot of responsibility. You know, I just remember just always fighting with these people because I was a new hire. You know, I was always at the top of the list of getting forced overtime, because they go through the entire list, but those who have more seniority could turn it down, which shouldn't be done. It wasn't done like that when I worked in the jail in Arizona. Everyone was responsible to do at least one shift. So in Arizona, I would get overtime like every 3 days, not four times a week. But, you know, the people in New Mexico in that jail, they would come home with $100,000 a year because, you know, but this was during the time was the holidays. That was the only time they would take overtime. They would end up getting six figures. But they never did it when we needed them to, because my aneurysms ruptured in October. Usually people with seniority, they don't take shifts until December for the holidays, which sucks because they should be forced to take at least one shift. That's why I love Arizona, because I had overtime every 3 days and you wasn't like really stressed out. but in New Mexico is 4 times a week. I was working 16-hour shifts, sleeping on the side of the road, and dealing with the stress of the job. So if you're dealing with the stress in your job, or you're dealing with stress at home, and you have medical issues, you really have to turn to God. You really have to listen to God and take care of yourself and remove yourself from all of those trauma bonds that are causing a negative impact in your life. You know, since I've been home, I've reconnected with a friend, but then I noticed that that was a trauma bond. So now I'm no longer speaking to that friend, because I remember being in such a stressful incident that I ended up having 2 seizures while with that friend. So I cut that friend off, no longer speaking to them. You have to get rid of all of your trauma bonds when you're dealing with stress. And just, you know, turn your life to God, give your life to God, which is what I'm doing, and my life is so much more peaceful. I'm healthier and happier. I finally got this job. I gotta get off the next stop and go to work. And everyone just have a blessed day. And if you listen to 36 minutes of this podcast, thank you. And I really appreciate it. And have a blessed day. And God loves you all as He loves me, because I'm God's favorite, just as you are. God bless.